Today we are talking about keeping our spirits and our community strong. We know that many of our families are carrying heavy loads right now. Mm-hmm. Some are struggling with mental health and substance use issues. Joining us this morning is Dr. Sarah Lesperance, Medical Officer of Health from the province of Manitoba, to help answer some of the questions on what we can do for ourselves and how to help others as well. Welcome, Doctor.
Hello, welcome. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, we are so grateful that you are taking the time out to talk about this, because this is a heavy topic. Mm-hmm. And there's so many things to cover here. But let's start with, like, mental health. How do I know if I'm just tired or just, you know, in a bad mood, or if my mental health is actually in trouble?
Yeah, that's a really great question. Like, especially when we think about the pressures that we're all facing these days. You know, mental health is really that sense of wellness that we feel in our, it can be in our heads, in our minds, but it's also in our bodies and our spirit. And it's not a fixed thing. It really flows and changes, and it shapes the ways that we experience the world and how we cope in it. Being, you know, in this state of mental wellness is really about finding a balance between all of these aspects, the physical, the mental, the emotional, and spiritual aspects of our lives. But when we're busy, you know, and going to work, raising children, moving through everyday life events, it can be really normal to feel tired or low energy, especially if we're not getting a chance to rest, to recover, or to recharge our emotional batteries. And oftentimes all we need is a break, a nice healthy meal, or a good conversation with someone to help restore us. But other times when we've been depleted for a very long time, maybe it's because we've been through a major life stress or medical conditions, it can be harder to balance back. And so, you know, if we're in trouble, we might notice we no longer feel happy, or we stop liking things that we used to enjoy, like visiting family or being outdoors. And we may feel numb or lost or start to really have troubling thoughts. And when those things happen, or when maybe we start to use substances more frequently or in a problematic way, then that's a sign we really need to reach out for help. I think the important thing really to remember, though, if we're worried about it, is that speaking up for your mental health is not a sign of weakness. Everybody feels out of balance at times, but we really can support each other. So if you feel or you're worried that you're in trouble, reach out for sure, whether that's to family, an elder, or a clinic, or someone that you trust to seek guidance and help.
Now, on that, you talked a little bit about this. I mean, about where that struggle happens. Like, a lot of trauma happens from things that happened in the past as well. I mean, like, when you think about intergenerational trauma, do doctors factor that in when looking at patients?
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. And you know what? That's a really important point when we talk about mental health, because the struggles from the past are not forgotten by our hearts and by our spirits. Even when they occur to us long ago, or to our family members, or to people that we love. And so these traumas can really continue to weigh heavy and make it challenging to manage things that are happening to us day to day right now. So yeah, as a doctor, I think that the important question to consider and to ask anyone who's facing struggles is, what is it that you are carrying? And asking the question, how can I help with carrying that? And how can I help to understand and support your journey? Medical science really shows us that deep and prolonged stress changes how our brains handle pain and stress. And sometimes when we're trying to manage it or medicate it on our own, people may turn to substances to cope. And so a doctor actually also really needs to understand this, that when someone is using substances to manage that pain, it's not a moral failing, it's a survival response. And our role is really to support people in finding spaces to put down the weight that they're carrying and to work together towards paths of healing, and doing that on a person's own terms, in their own time, and in ways that feel safe and meaningful to them.
I think that's really important, that to get that message across, that it's not a failure if you're in that space right now, right? It's, you're just needing some help, and you need to look into this and talk to somebody and try to get that help that is needed. That's so important, because I think a lot of people feel like they're failing, or that they're, you know, making wrong choices.
It is so normalized, the drug use and substance use in communities, that asking for help almost feels like that. There is still a lot of stigmatism.
And a shame. You feel ashamed. Ashamed.
Absolutely.
About that. So we see a lot of talk about harm reduction in our community, and there's a lot of controversy around harm reduction.
Yes.
But does this just encourage people to use more drugs? Because that's what people say, that, oh, you're just helping them use and stuff like that. So break it down for us and how harm reduction really works.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's a really, really common concern. And it definitely it's one that many, many people wonder and ask about. Harm reduction can definitely be a phrase that brings up a real range of different thoughts, images, worries and concerns. And it's important to talk about what these words mean. Harm reduction really is what it says it is. It's making something dangerous less harmful. It's like wearing a seatbelt. You get in a car crash, you reduce your chances of a worse injury or death. It's not about shaming someone for getting in a car. It's about helping them stay safe when they decide to be in that car. And really, harm reduction for substances works the same way. We're not saying that substance use will never hurt you or encouraging people to use drugs. But when someone is struggling with addiction or substance use, it's seeing that person for who they are. A daughter, a son, a mother, or a father, someone we care about, and saying to them, although this choice may be harmful to you, I still care about you, and I want to support you in ways to make this safer. And harm reduction is really about dignity, and it's about stopping the shame linked to substance use. Shame keeps people using in secret, and using in secret is when substance use becomes the most dangerous. For some people, harm reduction is about having access to condoms or sterile needles to reduce infections, or naloxone kits to reduce the risk of an opioid overdose. For some people, harm reduction is about cutting back or changing or even stopping their substance use. And at the end of the day, harm reduction is really about keeping someone healthy and alive for long enough so that they can choose a path to further healing when they're ready.
I think that's an excellent explanation of a harm reduction right there.
Yes.
It's just to keep them safe because they're going to use. And if they're going to use, they need to have a safe place.
Yeah.
So it's not encouraging it. It's just making sure that if something happens, they are in a safe place. They have clean needles so that you're not spreading HIV or anything like that.
Meeting them at where they're at. I mean, because so many communities, so many families do face this. And I think that shame really does play into a lot of things. Because what happens when a family does feel that shame and then it's not just one family member, but it's the whole family, then it affects the whole community. So how do you go about, you know, trying to help someone to get them out of that, someone who might be struggling with addiction?
Yeah, that's a really good question because it can be hard, right? It can be hard to know what to do and not to know if we're what we should say or how we should approach someone. And, you know, it's important to just realize, and we're talking about it today, it can be really scary to know what to do when someone we care about is struggling with addiction. Addictions are really powerful, and they can end up taking over an entire situation and make it really hard to connect and hard to have conversations.
Yeah.
The thing, you know, about addictions is they can be really isolating. So this is definitely worsened by that stigma and that shame that we talked about, and that whole sense of stigma linked to substance use in general. So it can be very hard to know what to say or what to do. You know, I find when in doubt, you can always say to someone, listen, I don't really like this drug, but I do love you, and I can see that you're hurting. Generally, like, I find that words tend to be heard less distinctly than tone. A person may forget the details of what you said, but they will remember the feeling that you care about them.
That is so true.
You know, thing is that managing or treating addiction is not the work of one person. It requires a community, a support network of medical, emotional, and spirit care. So it's not your one person's job to solve another person's addiction or to take over their path. You can also learn how to be a help to someone without exhausting yourself. So if you're not sure what to do, it's really important to reach out. Service providers understand that caregivers' health is just as important as the patient's, and they can help you with good suggestions and finding links to resources and, you know, talk about ways that you can help connect someone or support the person that you're worried about.
So let's talk about that. Where can people call? You have a person you care about that's in crises, or maybe you're in crises and you need some help. What can people do?
Yeah, 100%. So I think the important thing is to remember that you're not alone. There's always someone out there that's going to have been through this or seen something like this before and be able to talk to you and support you and help you with really good suggestions for next steps. So if one contact information I can give you is that if there's the person that you, or if you yourself, for example, or a person you care about is in crisis, you can call 988. That's the Suicide Crisis Helpline. It's a safe space. You can talk to someone 24 hours a day, every day of the year. So that's 988. You can also call the Hope for Wellness Helpline. That number is 1-855-242-3310. I'll repeat that later. But it's available 24/7 to all Indigenous people across Canada, and it offers services in Ojibwe, Cree, and Inuktitut on request. So that's the Hope for Wellness Helpline. Good place to get started and to ask questions and find resources. 1-855-242-3310.
Thank you for reminding me.
That helps.
They're not alone. You're not alone out there. Doctor,
definitely not.
Thank you so much for joining us. This has been very enlightening for everybody.
Yeah, it's been my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
All right. Until next time, there.